morning.
Red 10 standing by.
Red 7 standing by.
Red 3 standing by.
Red 6 standing by.
Red 9 standing by.
You're listening to the Ion Cannon Podcast.
Laugh it up, fuzzball.
Your source for entertainment reviews from a galaxy far, far away.
This is it.
Hey, laser clankers!
Welcome to the Ion Cannon Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Steven, and I'm joined by my friends and co-hosts, Tom and William. We are back. We're talking about the next two episodes of The Bad Batch, Season 3, Episode 10 and 11, are we past the point of no return, William? I think we can't go back.
Right? Are you having an identity crisis, Steven?
No, I was trying to say identity crisis, but then I messed it up and we're past the point of no return, so I think we just have to start over. From scratch, right?
Oh, yes. I love it. Yes, we are back with our review of the new episodes of The Bad Batch. This is another two-parter, and it's somewhat big in some ways. Tom, you want to lead us into what we're going to be talking about today? I have to hand it to you, Stephen. Sure. We give you a lot of crap sometimes, but that was a good one.
Thank you. I'll be here all day.
Oh, you better.
Okay, so we are going to be talking about Season 3, Episode 10, Identity Crisis, written by Sal Ruiz and written by Amanda Rose Munoz. And then the second episode is going to be The Point of No Return, directed by Nate Villanueva, and also written by Amanda Rose Munoz. Boy, you want to talk about an identity, I must be in some kind of crisis. In the episode, the Empire seeks out Force-sensitive children for nefarious experiments.
Yes. And the first episode has none of the Bad Batch again. It seems like they tend to do the two-parters when one of the episodes does not have the Bad Batch. And they're like, oh, shoot, we need to have at least the Bad Batch in one episode this week. So we'll just release two.
It does crack me up because, like, we talked last week about how, you know, we thought this was going to be the Asajj episode, like, an identity crisis, and then they crossed the point of no return. Not only is Asajj not here, like I said, two literally different topics and episodes. Like,
for the most part, yeah. I mean, they are connected thematically.
Yeah.
And in fact, it reminded me a lot of if you took the premiere minus the second episode in the middle, right, where we went to the Bad Batch briefly, it felt a lot like that, right? There was an episode, like the first part of this episode is like really just focused on these children and how they're being taken and experimented on. And then the second one, that's when we get the Bad Batch again and things start to change a bit more. And they're kind of related but also not. Let's dive into the first part, identity crisis. So the episode opens with these new characters. I don't think we know their species, but they're very adorable.
Good way to describe it.
Ailish, yeah. And Baron, we don't really know which one's which. I'm assuming the child is Ailish, but I could be wrong there. It kind of reminds me almost like a Grogu type of moment, right? You got the young toddler who's force sensitive, can't really talk, is clearly strong enough in the force that is accidentally using the force to throw objects in a market and whatnot, and as Asajj Ventress warns Omega, that can get you into trouble because an Aqualish reports this child to a bounty hunter who just happens to be Cad Bane. So and nice, I love seeing Cad Bane back. What did you guys think when Cad Bane walked into the room?
I mean, it's hard not to be excited about it, right? Like, it's Cad Bane.
Okay, yeah. I'll be honest. Cad Bane is my favorite bounty hunter, period.
Ooh.
Like, yeah, favorite. Well, do you guys have a favorite?
I was going to say, I am so surprised so far in these episodes, we have not seen Embo.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true.
But you dodged my question. Is Embo your favorite?
No. It's Cad Bane.
Okay.
Hands down, it's Cad Bane. No, but I'm just I'm just saying that for an opportunity to bring in some kind of bounty hunters, that Embo is nowhere to be seen within this series.
Yeah.
Give Dave time.
It'll happen.
That's true. But, even as a background character, yeah, it would be fun to see.
Steven, do you have a favorite bounty hunter?
I mean, it's hard to go wrong with like OG Boba Fett, like episode 5 Boba Fett specifically, like very ignore true everything else around it. But Cad Bane's got to be pretty high up there too.
Yeah,
honestly,
he's easily my favorite bounty hunter. I love it. His voice is great. Corey Burton just does such a good job. Hello there. It's so good.
it's the Levon Cleef aspect that you see in this character.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. The old Western style with a toothpick in his mouth. Oh, I mean, can't. And how he looks in this episode is just outstanding with a new look on him as well. So, and he still has Toto, which I find it funny. I almost want to, every time I hear it, I want to say, where's my little dog Toto? But no, it's Toto. It's a robot.
Toto 360.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes. Cad Bane is, he's the best. I love Cad Bane.
And then I also
you do realize, William, he spent the first part of this episode kidnapping a child, right?
Yes, but he's done that before. Yeah. I'm not saying he's a good guy. He's very much a bad guy. He brags about how good he is. You know, like at the end, right? He's like, oh, I wouldn't be very good at my job if I hadn't done this many times before. Mm-hmm. He's actually the perfect choice for this. Because as I started thinking about it, remember in Clone Wars, the Clone Wars episode, Children of the Force, Darth Sidious tasked him with kidnapping Force-sensitive children and taking them to Mustafar. And so he is like, when you have a Force-sensitive child and you kidnapped, Cad Bane's your man.
Mm-hmm. It's a very specific set of circumstances. I'm surprised it's happened twice.
Yes,
but
he's a man with a very specific set of skills.
It absolutely positively has to be kidnapped.
Skills that would make me a nightmare for people like you.
William. Just
yeah.
All right.
William.
Okay. No. That's when you cross Cad Bane with Liam Neeson, and I don't know what happens.
Yeah, you get something very different.
You get something very different. Yes. But I feel bad for the Ailish's parent, Baron, probably ish, something like that.
One of the two.
Yeah, like the poor kid. He gets his it's unclear if it's, you know, anyway, his parent gets like shot and stunned, and Cad Bane grabs the toddler, stuffs him in a pram of some sort or a big box, and you know, at least Toto 360 gives Ailish the doll, mm-hmm, and before they leave, helps him stop crying. But Cad Bane's so cool. And just the thanks for the tip as he leaves. Ah, he's great. I love him. I can't help it. He's so good.
William's like 10 out of 10. The first 2 minutes of the episode were amazing.
Every time Cad Bane shows up on screen, it levels it up at least a couple points.
you're not wrong.
Yeah.
No, you're definitely not wrong.
Okay, but the rest of the episode, most of it, sadly, Cad Bane is really only at the beginning and the end. He completes his job very quickly. Most of it is on Tantus. And we get more with Dr. Emery Carr. Before, she was kind of like in the background, and we know she's a clone. We found that out at the end of the last season. But they haven't really dug into that all that much. We saw her be nice to Omega and give her the doll in the premiere, but that's about it. But she makes a play for the role of chief scientist, and she gets the promotion, and that's when they introduce us to, and we've been hearing about this vault, or seeing them like walk toward this high security area throughout the season, and we finally get to see what's inside in the vault. And Steven, what was your reaction when Dr. Hemlock takes Emery Carr into the vault?
So I thought we'd been in the vault before, because I thought that was where we had like the cloning pods. Like, we even see it briefly in this episode as well. The thing that I think was new is there's just a bunch of children in there. Mm-hmm. which, you know, is horrifying for all manner sorts of reasons. But yeah, like it is where the other, it seems like subjects, specimens is the word that's thrown around a lot throughout this episode that, you know, Hemlock is using for the research. Or I guess Nala Se was using for the research. Hemlock is kind of just like overseeing it all. But yeah, it is not a good day for them. They are never, no day is a good day for them. They're just, I don't know. It actually kind of reminded me of the prison in Andor in a lot of ways. It had a similar kind of look and feel to it.
It had a similar feel, but the thing that for me, they were constantly sitting there like very bored working on puzzles. And the only thing that by way of experimentation was, all we're going to do is sit here and just take your blood samples here, do these puzzles to keep you busy. And it also appeared that when it came to Nala Se would actually, it appears, use their real names instead of Hemlock doing the whole, hey, here's your number. And the sad thing is Nala Se appeared to always keep telling them, you will at some point go home. And you get that feeling they were never going to go home.
No. Do you think she intended to like help them get home at some point? Or was she just giving them a false hope?
I read it as false hope.
I agree with that too. I thought it was false hope as well.
And I think the reason I think that specifically is it feels the first time when the first kid, is it Eva, I believe? I was gonna like, you know, the one like the Jedi whose name I actually can't remember. But like I think it's meant to make you feel like Nala Se was actually helping them and Emery is also going to help them. And then this like slow realization throughout the episode, they're like, no, Nala Se was never gonna do that either. Like this is just false hope. Truly soul sucking place to be, because that is just there's no happy ending to it.
Right. Totally agree.
Yeah, no, it's you really feel bad for the kids, Ava and Jax, and they're, you know, they're treated like clones, but they're you know, with just identifiers, but they're just young kids. You know, they have clearly have there's a third kid who was never named.
I actually think it's worse than that though, William, like as we're talking about it.
Well, they're imprisoned. Yeah.
Well, but it's not even that. It's they're genuinely treated like, I don't know, lab.
Like specimens. Literally.
Like lab rats.
Yeah, it's horrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's so heartbreaking to see. And, you know, they even say in the episode, there's not many adults left in the galaxy with high M counts, which is not surprising, given what we've heard, but it still really kind of really hits you hearing that, right? There's not many, many out there with a lot of high midichlorian counts. And of course, children are much easier to keep in line and don't really know what's going on. And so you can just imprison them and be horrible to them. And it's just very sad. It shows just how evil the Empire is.
Yeah.
We also
not get that we needed a reminder.
No, you know, but you know, it's another reminder. We also get a bit more detailed explanation about why Omega is important in these kids. You know, they kind of alluded to it in past episodes, but it's nice to hear Hemlock clearly and concisely sum it up and say that, you know, I think the M count cannot be directly replicated from the source. But Nala Se knew of another way to do it somehow. And so Omega's blood is the only binder that's proven to be compatible with their DNA to replicate the M count levels. So even these other kids, they've never managed to do it, but they're still studying them and taking their blood. Look like they're trying to, we saw that machine analyzing their blood. I think it's probably more than just analyzing their blood for the M count, but actually trying to see if could they clone someone with those M count levels and pass it on. Clearly Nala Se knows how to do it and either hasn't shared it with the Empire or, because she was running this program for a long time. Do you think she did it by accident and was trying to figure out how to get it again? Or does she have the solution? Or is it literally like she had a solution, she knows how to replicate it, but it only worked for Omega?
That's a great question.
That's a really good question.
That's a really good question, but that also would be an explanation of why she always had to keep Omega close to her and why Omega was so important to her. And she kept destroying the blood samples.
Right.
So she could know how to do it. She just doesn't want to tell the Empire.
Yeah. Yep. But yeah, with her in prison now, it's unlikely that they'll be able to make much progress, right? Even Emery Carr visits her later and says that, she asks Nala Se if the plan is to discard the children like she did to her, because, she was a clone who's, I guess, effectively discarded, although she did pretty well for herself now being the chief scientist for the Empire.
Chief scientist.
But what's interesting is Nala Se makes a comment that the children, as much as she doesn't like the children being there, they were needed in order to protect Omega. And like, it sounds like she cares about Omega more. I don't know.
Yeah, my read was that Nala Se just basically played favorites and had to choose.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think Nala Se is necessarily a hero in this story.
No.
But at best, she is, somewhat neutral. But
yeah.
She can be good at times, and she can be evil at times. She's very much in the gray. Yeah.
But to your point, protecting Omega seems to have been her main goal, primary goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it really feels like this episode is designed to show us Emery Carr's journey toward, presumably, and it's just my theory, being sympathetic to both the children and maybe the Bad Batch in general, because she starts off, we see that start in the premiere when she gives Omega the doll back. She didn't have to do that. And then we see her, start to realize these kids are being mistreated and are, they're looking at her like, oh, can we go home now? And, you feel so bad. And you can start to see she's feeling a little guilty too. She's in charge of the program. And these kids are her responsibility. But, and she knows, she even tells Nala Se that the kids don't belong there.
Right.
But I think she also doesn't believe she can change anything. Nala Se actually disagrees. She tells Emery, you have the power if you wanted to. So I think this is really the beginning of Emery Carr's transformation, her crosshair moment.
Yeah, that lines up with what I'm expecting as well. Mm-hmm. I'll be curious to see how it goes. It doesn't feel like it'll be easy, if nothing else.
No.
Not especially with Hemlock sitting there putting the pressure on her, saying, now that you're running this program, I would imagine if anything goes wrong, you're going to be the one to blame.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Hemlock's not going to hesitate.
Yeah.
Blame flows Hemlock's downhill.
Yeah.
So, Emery, as part of her job, she actually, it's technically not her job, but she insists on traveling with Scorch to Coruscant, the Station 03, I think it's called, above Coruscant, to obtain the latest specimen, Little Ailish from Cad Bane. And again, we see her like really be surprised by just how young the child is, and I think you just see it get worse and worse and worse for Emery. She just starts realizing, oh, first these are kids. Oh, now that's not like, teenagers or younger kids, but like they're toddlers, right? They can't even talk, and now we're kidnapping them. And I think she's starting to realize just how bad this is.
I think what pushed her over the edge was basically the callousness of Cad Bane when he delivered the bounty.
Uh-huh.
Because to him, it was just like, well, it's a bounty and I don't care. And she's like, but it's a child.
Yep. Yeah.
I think that was another thing that's pushing her toward possibly helping in the future.
Yeah. And like when, we see Jax try to escape at one point, and Scorch like stuns, literally she like shoots him with a stun blast. And, again, she's like not happy that they're using such extreme force on a kid, Ava is, she's worried that Jax will get in trouble. And by the end, she's like, she's mad at Dr. Carr, at Emery Carr, for saying that, oh, Jax won't get in trouble. But
turns out
he was thrown in, solitary confinement for 2 days. And so, we start to see that Ava she's starting to realize that maybe they're lying to her. They're mm-hmm. that everything's yeah. not all the on the up and up. And while Dr. Carr hasn't done anything, you can see it's really weighing on her. And I think that's why she, in a really kind of touching moment, she gives Ava Omega's old homemade toy, which was so sweet, you know, because that's the, you know, it was like a very similar to the one that Wrecker gave her, right? The one she made out of straw at the beginning of this episode. Yep. The little Tuca doll. And so at least she has something to keep her company. And you can start to see again, Dr. Carr is being a little more sympathetic. I don't know. We'll see. I'm really enjoying seeing Emery's journey and her mm-hmm. character development.
Same.
This season.
Same. It's funny because I think when Eric and I watch the episode, I think Eric's like, yeah, she's going to turn.
He's not wrong.
Yeah.
I suspect it. Right? Clearly. I think we can all see them laying the groundwork, just like we all saw Crosshair, right?
Yeah.
Sorry
to interrupt you, Stephen.
No, I was going to say, the thing I think that impressed me most with this episode is Mount Tantus has its own like music key now. This very like depressing, like every day is the same. You mm-hmm. are in prison. Mm-hmm. And even at the beginning of this episode, when it starts off from the original episodes with Omega, it's like, oh man, this is all, it's already awful. I already feel bad for everything that's happening in this episode and nothing's even happened yet. They've just done an amazing job making Mount Tantus feel truly awful.
Yep.
That's so true. The music has just been so good. And just the way it's shot and everything. Like, we talked about this in the premiere, right? When we saw the passage of time on Tantus, and it just, it feels very tonally similar to that premiere, and which I loved. So,
yep.
We also, you know, speaking of Tantus, get little tantalizing hints of like, you know, other assets in the sub-level containment chamber below the vault. And that's gotta be where they keep the Zilla Beast, right? Cause we know they were experimenting on the Zilla Beast and other things. That's gotta be where their large experiments are.
Do you seriously think there's a Zilla Beast on Mount Tantus?
I mean, there's gotta be, right? We saw them experimenting earlier last season.
Yeah, but nobody ever made any kind of hint that it was ever transported.
I don't know if it's physically there now,
it could still be. I would say it's still on Coruscant.
I think
it's on Coruscant.
It's part of the whole same project, I think. That's my theory.
That would be my guess as well, William. I expect like we might have clone Zilla Beast or other clone creatures. I think definitely have cloned people that mm-hmm. like clone Palpatines effectively.
Yep.
Yeah.
I assume that's what's been in the like the tanks that Hemlock keeps visiting. But mm-hmm.
yeah. No, I think this is the new Kamino. This is cloning central. And everything cloning is happening here. And so, you know, maybe the Zilla Beast is gone. I'm just using it as an example, right? There's many other, I'm sure, creatures that they are experimenting on here. But
of course.
It's very interesting. It's fun to it's fun to hear more about what might be going on Tantus.
Yeah.
We also, changing topics a little bit, get to see a familiar face again. Governor Tarkin.
very briefly.
Very briefly. What did you guys think of good old Tarkin?
I thought it was good to see Tarkin show up. Mm-hmm. And do, you know, the things that Tarkin does, which is, you know, blame other people for problems, put the screws on them, et cetera, et cetera.
And if it doesn't pay off, I'm going to pull your funding.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You know, always all the classic Tarkin lines.
Tarkin does what Tarkin, you know, what he does, right? Yeah. Again, showing that Tarkin is, I just love that he doesn't know about the project, right? But he's very concerned about the funding and where is the money going. And we saw this in Rebels too, right? All of the infighting amongst the various Imperial factions, right? Oh, the Death Star versus the TIE Defender program or whatnot. And so, yeah, it's fun to see all of you know, Tarkin back and, mm-hmm. and everything. Yeah. So
there's one other off-screen cameo we get in this episode.
Oh.
Did you catch it?
Oh, you're right. Sid. We got a reference to Sid.
There's a certain Trandoshan who finally got what she deserved.
Thank goodness. Yeah, we don't know if she died, right? Or if she's like in prison, but clearly she was.
I mean, we can hope.
She was tortured.
Did I miss this?
I mean,
I'm going to have to go back and watch the episode.
Yeah.
Where I think it's Scorch is talking to one of the kind of clone X, the whatever they're called, the like secret mm-hmm. agent clones.
Yeah, the CX2 is the mm-hmm. yeah.
And you know, he refers to interrogating a Trandoshan and getting information out of it.
Yep.
And now we know.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
I should say.
And the Trandoshan, Sid, gave up information on a pirate who's been in who the Batch have been in contact with, which has got to be Fee Genoa, right?
Yep.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I think that's not gonna bode well for them. There are other Clone X troopers who are for some reason not ready to join CX2 in the field yet. I don't know if they're being cloned. They're being conditioned. Maybe they're just not ready being completed. Maybe the conditioning isn't ready yet or something. I don't know.
Yeah. It wasn't particularly clear.
Yeah, it was not clear.
No. But CX2 says, hey, I can handle this on my own. Although Hemlock, you know, as any good bad leader does, puts the pressure right down from Tarkin to Hemlock to do not fail. Do not return without Omega. Otherwise, you're in big trouble. And that's pretty much where the episode ends. The CX2 knows some details about... they know at least Fee Genoa is connected, so it's probably not all that long until they're discovered, which actually takes us right into episode 11, Point of No Return, because in Point of No Return, we see CX2 right at the beginning finding Fee Genoa, and he finds her, hops onto her ship while she's refueling and dealing with the droids, good old Mel and Ollie, and he accesses her nav computer and discovers the location of Pabu.
Okay, so here's my thing.
Uh-huh.
So he gets onto the ship, all the alarms go off. I can completely understand that Fee wasn't able to hear the alarms because she was actually in a room with loud music, I think complaining about something or other, about payment or something.
Yeah.
But once he goes back on her ship, yeah. When she goes back on her ship, and yes, he was able to, he was able to turn off the alarm. But you would think when she got back on her ship, there would still be some kind of warning that somebody got onto the ship. Yes, she had an inkling something was off. But I would still say the ship should have had something to say it was illegally accessed, to where she would have known something happened while she was inside that room. I'm just saying.
No, ideally... I'm assuming CX2 like erases the entry logs or whatever your hacker equivalent is, but
it's I know what I'm saying is a possible stretch, but still you would think that if she's got all these antiquities she's finding throughout the galaxy and she doesn't want anybody to steal them, she would have a little bit more of a security system that would have a backup to a backup.
You'd think so, but...
Yeah, you'd think so. Yeah.
You're not wrong, Tom.
Okay.
Yeah, but, she doesn't know. She doesn't figure it out, and CX2 slips away unnoticed just in time. Before we move on, I have to note, did the droid... You know, Ollie, who's trying to refuel the ship. Did his voice sound familiar?
See, this is one of those trick questions. Oh, no, it didn't, William, but I feel like that's the wrong answer.
Well, that's a sign of a good voice actor. You can't recognize him even when he's Anakin Skywalker himself, Matt Lanter.
Oh, that is impressive.
Yeah, wow. It's fun they're bringing Matt Lanter back. I think Maybe that's like a, hey, you have to at least show up somewhere in every, you know, animated series, right? I can't remember if you voiced a character on Rebels or not, but it's cool. They brought him back briefly. Just, hey, come do a voice for Bad Batch. So it's cool that Matt Lanter's back briefly, but you know, playing a little droid called Ollie.
That is pretty sweet.
Yeah. So now the show returns to Pabu and the Bad Batch. We finally get some Bad Batch in after an episode, really good episode without them. Clearly, they've decided to heed Asajj Ventress' warning and are getting ready to leave Pabu. They're almost done loading their gear onto the Marauder and saying goodbye. We get to see a bunch of the Pabu residents return, including Shep and Liana Hazard and Miss Gaia, Mox, played by Daniel Logan, and Stack and Deke from the premiere, second episode of the premiere, are back, and even on the planet too. I didn't ever realize they... I forgot they went to Pabu. Maybe they mentioned that, but you know, it's cool to see everyone.
It would almost make sense. Yeah,
I think you're right. I think we did see that. I just forgot. But you know, it's nice to see everyone here. Everyone's happy. They're saying goodbye. You know, Omega.
Are they really happy, or are they all bummed that basically that Omega has to leave?
I mean, they're gonna miss Omega and the Batch for sure. But right. You know, everyone's. It's peaceful. It's idyllic. There's nothing wrong. Everything's going to be great, you know? We get a nice touching moment with Omega and Liana Hazard as they visit the Archeum and place two artifacts, Tech's goggles and Omega's Tukadal Lula, which is... those are like the two most precious items to Omega, right? Well, obviously her doll Lula, originally Wreckers. I actually forgot that it was Wreckers, that he was trying to get Lula before Kamino was attacked and eventually gives it to Omega. I'd forgotten that.
That was funny. I totally forgotten that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
But it's a really touching moment, right? Because especially in season two, we find out that the artifacts of the Archeum are all recovered by Fee, right? And they really have no monetary value, but they're just important culturally to the people of Pabu. And that is very much a great description for Tech's cracked goggles and Lula. And so they kind of leave their, you know, the two most precious, like a item that was Tech's and, you know, memorializing him and Lula on Pabu in the Archeum. It's a really nice scene. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like there's nothing else to add, William.
Sorry. William talks too much. No,
no, you summed it up very well, because basically they're leaving behind something that is of value that they will be remembered by. I mean, because at this point, they're gonna be planet hopping to try and stay one step ahead of the Empire until the Empire is gone. And at this point, they have no idea how long they're going to be planet hopping. Or how long they'll be able to stay out in front of the Empire. So, you know, you did perfectly summing everything up. Wow.
Well, that's when things get a little dangerous. And Steven, you want to catch people up on what happens here when CX-2 arrives?
CX-2 arrives. He does the thing I think we're starting to associate with all these kind of clone X troopers, which is infiltrate, sneak around, confirm the target is there. And then he blows up. I'm blanking on the name of their ship. Why am I blanking
on the Marauder.
Thank you.
The Marauder.
He blows up the Marauder, which I realize would seem more impactful if I remembered the name of the ship. But what is it with Star Wars TV shows and blowing up the hero ship?
Yeah, I know.
But First we lost the Razor Crest.
It's kind of, I know, the Razor Crest was particularly heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
But the Marauder is no more. It's gone. It's
bits really
and
gone.
Pieces. Yeah.
And I just hope they don't also get a bad ship next. Hopefully, whatever they upgrade to is better.
They're only gonna get a two-seater ship for the four of them. So you know.
Yeah. I don't think there's any. There's no.
You're right. That is probably
future.
What will happen. But it still hurts.
Yeah, but no, I mean, Gonki is—he's thrown in the water. I don't know if he'll survive. Wrecker is caught in the blast and injured and pretty much unconscious for the rest of the episode. It's bad. It's bad. Things are not looking good. And now there's, you know, the moment the ship blows up, they're worried, and all of a sudden they look above, and the shadow comes across Pabu.
Yeah, and the Empire, the nice, peaceful planet of Pabu, basically gets an Imperial makeover with a bunch of troops landing. And I'll tell you, that's the one thing I didn't expect from the trailer when they show the Imperials coming into a city and everybody running. At that point, I never expected it to be Pabu. But now you see it, and you're like, pretty shocked that they were found.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there's no hesitation. It is blow up the Marauder, start hauling people out of their homes. Like, this is the Empire at its finest Empire at its worst, you know, however you want to describe it.
Yeah.
You can really feel the dread as the Ladais descend on Pabu, and the day shifts from, you know, from like sunset to nighttime, and from, you know, a bittersweet goodbye to terror. It's so well done. Even the music, like, has this sense of dread and very Order 66 type of feel to it. Not quite that emotion, but like almost. This entire sequence is just so well done.
Yeah, I really appreciate in particular, I felt like the Clone X trooper from the previous kind of two-parter, it felt capable, but not quite deadly as he feels here. Like, CX2 is literally like counting down the number of the batch that are left. Like, taking out one. Hunter, you know, tries to escape by, or not escape by, like help them escape by stealing a Ladai gunship. It's in the air. CX2 shoots out the pilot, crashes it down. That's two. It is just brutal. Like, they're at no point to this episode do you really feel like they've got a shot.
No.
Two troopers. They've got CX2 working against them. It is.
I mean, the Empire like just starts blowing up every potential avenue of escape. Right. Every air or sea vehicle is just destroyed instantaneously. Almost. They come in with the full force of the Empire. And yeah, you're right. CX2 is just knocking them off one by one. He takes out Wrecker. At least he survives, but he's unconscious and needs medical care from AZI-3. That sequence with Hunter in the Ladai as it like spirals down, you know, he shoots the CX2 shoots the pilot on his own side in order to take out Hunter. Like, oh my goodness.
Yeah. And then once that's taken care of, then they start doing the house to house to try and find Crosshair and Omega. And it seemed like you totally got the feeling that they started at the base of Pabu and were slowly forcing them upward to where it's like there was nowhere else to run, because you're always going upward to the smallest point of basically the island.
Yeah. Yep. And
it's just heartbreaking.
Yeah, and like, you know, the Empire does not care. Like, it doesn't matter if, you know, they're destroying the livelihood of the citizens of Pabu. You know, the mayor, Shep Hazard, is like, he's upset, but the Empire doesn't care, right?
Honestly, I'm just surprised he made it out alive. I kept expecting a shot to the guy. Like, no, this is how much we care about your complaints. Goodbye.
Yep.
Yeah, like that line, until she's turned over to me, your island will burn, is just
brutal.
Very.
Oh yeah, it really is. It's really brutal. It's really brutal.
And it leaves them with one out, which is Omega surrenders, and then they try and track back to Tantus. And I do like that it's down to like Crosshair and Omega to kind of make this decision. And even there, Crosshair's not a fan, but I think as we've learned, there is no you can't convince Omega of anything.
No.
No.
And she even uses Crosshair's logic against him, right? Focus on the bigger mission, Crosshair. I'm just a small part of it. Like, it, and that's what he would always, you know, say. It's not the greatest plan ever. But she's right that their only option. If she doesn't surrender, they will find her eventually. There's
right.
This is not even, you know, not even Narquina 5. There is not one way out. There is no way out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's one of those. It's like, it's the lesser of two evils.
Yeah.
If you're going to hide, the island's going to be continually being destroyed to where there's really going to be nothing left. But if you go, at least some of the island's going to be able to stay.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, they're going to find her anyway and take her. So how much pain do you want to put the civilians through?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it leads to the sequence where she surrenders. She's being marched back to CX2's ship. And
they instantly find the comlink, of course, right? Unsurprisingly. Well, yeah, I mean,
and they knew they would.
Yep.
Yeah.
But and then there's that awful moment of like Crosshair is getting ready for his shot. And of course, that's the moment that some stormtroopers show up. And by the time he's able to aim again, it is too late.
Mm-hmm.
And she is gone yet again.
When that tracker shoots out toward the shuttle that Omega's on and it just plops in the water, just barely short, it is heartbreaking. You know, it's like, oh my gosh. Oh.
It's one of those where it's heartbreaking, but you knew that it wasn't going to be easy to find her again.
Yeah.
It had to have something to where there was a challenge for them to meet to get the information they wanted to get back to Omega.
Yeah.
It wasn't going to be this easy.
Yeah. I'll say I do hope we don't spend a ton of time looking for her again, because it is kind of a reset to the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. But
right.
Only time will tell, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, you know, it's. I think it's made all the more impactful that, remember, Crosshair's, his hand has not been fully healed, right? His aim has been, yep, slightly off. Do you think that played a role in this, his hand, or is the ship just already too far away?
I don't think it was the hand. I think it was bad timing, or it was just the timing of it all. I don't think, because I still get back to, It is mental, but it's going to be that one thing that's going to have the light switch turn on and the hand issue is going to go away and he's going to be back to Crosshair. So.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, are you feeling like the hand issue is what caused the shot to be missed?
I'm not sure.
That's what William is saying.
We know he has a hand issue, right? And that he's been struggling with his shots.
I feel like he was relatively steady. The issue.
Yeah.
To me, it looked like the shot falls short, which
it was just timing
because the ship was leaving.
Yeah.
Yep. It was just the timing of it all.
Right. And I don't know, like, if his hand had been better, could he maybe have gotten the shot off earlier or more accurately? I don't know. I don't think that was it. But I was glad that it wasn't like a.
Yeah.
It's oh, my hand's short. Magically, you know.
Right.
Like, yep. Yeah.
Right. But I
don't think it was the main source of the problem.
But I also look at it from this point of view, too. If he made the shot, then it would have been too easy for them to find her with how many episodes left.
Yep.
So
they
had to give him some kind of a challenge. That's how I look at it.
Yeah. Oh, great, great episode. And really leaves us on a pretty big cliffhanger. You know, the Omega's once again in the hands of the Empire and they have no way to find her. She literally says, right, in this episode, look, we've tried everything and we can't find Tantus. And so this is our only option if we're going to find it.
Mm-hmm.
And it fails. Yeah. What do they do next? How do they find Omega and Tantus?
Tune in next week.
Tune in next week to find out.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. It was a good episode. It was a. Mm-hmm. Should we get into our rating? I think.
Yeah,
I
think William, why don't you go first,
please? Yeah,
see, that's what happens when you suggest it. I thought these episodes. I got first question. Do we want to do like rate them separately or together? Because technically they aired together.
Separately.
Okay.
Really?
They're unrelated episodes in my mind.
You're right. They really were unrelated. So yeah. So let's see. First episode, now I gotta think about them differently, right? The first episode, Identity Crisis. I loved seeing Cad Bane. I loved seeing Emery Carr's transformation. you know, it was, it's great. It's a very different type of episode. Very more similar to, I guess, the season, the first episode of the premiere. No Bad Batch, but it's great to see them. I like those kind of episodes, right? We get a lot more on Tantus. I think probably do. Actually, I might just do the same rating for both.
Right.
The second episode, it just happens to be the same rating for both, but I'll rate them differently. The second episode also, it felt like we were getting so much momentum now heading into the series finale in just a few episodes. The Empire quickly takes over the planet. Things are not looking good. So, yeah, I think I have to give both episodes a 9 out of 10. I loved them. They were really good. And in these episodes, I guess, what am I Womp Rats doing? You know, they snuck on 9 Womp Rats onto Omega Shuttle. And the great thing about Womp Rats is you can track them through hyperspace. And so that's how they're going to find her.
Okay.
Tom, what are you going to do?
Well, I'm going to give the first episode an 8.5. Love Cad Bane, but I'm giving it an 8.5. I just, good episode, 8.5. I'm just going to say my 8.5 Womp Rats. See, they actually tried to save the baby from going into that little crate. But the thing is, once the 9 of them were trying to go in, as the thing was being closed, that's how it ended up being a 0.5. Mm. So the 8.5 Womp Rats actually went to Mount Tantus with the child. So they're running around Mount Tantus somewhere. Okay.
Okay.
Could be set up a plot for something else later down the line. We don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah, you never
do. And then the second, pardon?
I said, you never know.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, well, you never know what's going to happen with the 8 Womp Rats. That 0.5 Womp Rat, I don't know what he's going to be up to. And then the second episode, I'm giving a 9. I thought it was a very good episode. I'm just going to leave it at that. We talked enough about it. Good episode. And it sets up a really good cliffhanger for the rest of these episodes. So my 9 Womp Rats, I don't know. They're going to stay on Pabu hoping for the Bad Batch to come back at some point. If they ever come back.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah. So, Steven, you're last.
I'm going to be pretty similar. William, I'm going to, just to borrow some of your thinking and spirit, the first episode is really like an 8, but I'm going to give it a 0.5 boost just for Cad Bane. Solid episode, very sad, but exactly what they were going for. And I had huge props to them for like making Mount Tantus feel depressing across the board. So 8.5 for the first one. Second episode, again, fantastic, great momentum. I'll give it a 9. My combined like 17.5 Womp Rats, it turns out there's actually an additional, why am I blanking on the word? Another vault underneath the child vault we saw in the first episode. And in that vault are housed the 17.5 Womp Rats that are truly the key to Hemlock's plans. So we'll have more to discover there in the future.
Mm.
So they're the key to Project Necromancer then.
No, there's Project Necromancer, then there's the kids, and then there's an additional project where even the name is classified, Dom. I can't.
Interesting. So Hemlock's got his own project.
Time. Sorry.
Interesting. Top I could secret. See that. I could see it.
Oh, wow. This was a fun one. This was a great episode. Great two episodes, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And I can really see why. I mean, in many ways, with the exception of CX2's cliffhanger at the beginning of the first part, they didn't have to make it a two-parter. They are very different feeling episodes, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. Steven. But I suspect that because there's no Bad Batch in the first one, they wanted to do it as a two-parter just so that they don't have a week without the Batch. They seem to have done that every single time there's been a two-parter. Or a three-parter, it's been because one of them didn't have the Bad Batch, which I don't, you know, sometimes have Omega or something. I don't blame them, but, you know, it
not makes a bad sense. Strategy.
Yeah. So, yeah. No, I this is a great two-parter, and I'm excited to see what they do next week. How will they find Omega? We'll find out when Juggernaut airs next Wednesday, the Bad Batch season 3 episode 12, and we're getting into the last 4 episodes of the series. So
wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's almost here. It's definitely picking up steam.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be fun to see how they're going to end the series.
Yeah, it will. I'm excited to see what they do. But for now, we have a lot of theories, but we have no concrete answers. So I think that's where we'll leave you. I want to thank you all for listening, as always. And we'll be back next week with our review of Juggernaut. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Ion Cannon Podcast, your source for entertainment reviews from a galaxy far, far away. For over a decade, Ion Cannon has covered every corner of the saga, from the films and animated series like The Clone Wars and Rebels, to books, comics, games, and more. If you like what you hear, please rate us in your favorite podcast client. Your review will help this show grow within the Star Wars community. We can be found at our website, ioncannoncast.com, and you can follow us through Facebook and Twitter. To email us, you can do so at contact@ioncannoncast.com. The Ion Cannon Podcast is not associated with Lucasfilm, the Walt Disney Company, or any and all of their respective trademarks or copyright holders. Any opinion expressed on the show are that of the hosts. This podcast is a production by fans, for fans, and is copyright 2018.